Governor Ron DeSantis may have canceled local COVID rules, but you still have to wear a mask in some places. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava will join us this hour on the governor's action this week, suspending local COVID restrictions and the pandemic power balance between local governments in Tallahassee. Also, how did the governor sign a new voting restriction law live on Fox News from West Palm Beach during a campaign-style event this week? And then gun violence in South Florida.
Our intel has shown us that there will be a bloody summer.
A community organizer and top police director will join us this hour. 800-743-WLRN to join our conversation on the South Florida Roundup, made possible by Willie the B-Man, Bee Removal Specialist. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and supporting public media. Local mask mandates are no more after Governor Ron DeSantis signed an executive order on Monday canceling local pandemic restrictions and emergency orders, except masks are still required in some places, like airports, public transportation, inside county government buildings like libraries, and businesses can still require customers to wear masks and remain socially distanced. So what has changed? And what hasn't? And where? And how does a new law limiting local government emergency orders impact you? Here we are, underway live on this Friday afternoon on the South Florida Roundup with you at 800-743-9576. 800-743-WLRN. You can also tell us your story, share your experiences on Twitter. At WLRN is our handle there. Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava is with us live on this Friday afternoon. Madam Mayor, welcome back to WLRN.
Thank you, Tom. Great to be with you.
Wonderful to have you as well. Lots happening here. You sent out a statement on Tuesday after the governor's executive order that said the local state of emergency remains in place. Are you ignoring the governor's executive order?
Oh, no, sir. His state emergency is in place as well. So simply his order is very focused on restrictions. Mm-hmm. And those, of course, are now the state of the law in Florida, and we've rescinded the orders that were different. But it does not restrict what we do on county property, and so we are going to continue to do those.
I think we may have just dropped your Zoom audio. Madam Mayor, you're still with us?
Things that we think, Officer Dr. Critical. Yes. Yes.
Sorry.
We're doing those things that... Yes, we're doing those things that are critical to make sure that our public is safe. So we know from the medical advisors that masking, disinfecting, and distancing are the key things mm-hmm. that keep us safe. We have fewer than half our residents vaccinated and new variants being discovered on a regular basis. So these are precautions that we can take really as common courtesy to our friends and neighbors, even if we've been vaccinated ourselves, and also just to be sure that we can stem the tide of others getting sick or new variants coming into our community.
In the last hour, we spoke with the mayor of St. Petersburg, Mayor Kreisman, who said that his legal staff said that they can't have any local mask orders or socially distance orders, even on city property. You have those in place in Miami-Dade County and Miami-Dade County facilities. Do you understand that difference? Is it an interpretation difference?
Well, our county attorney has been very clear that this is within the scope of my authority. We're in a state of emergency, and I can do these things. I don't know if the fact that I'm a strong mayor under our charter gives me additional flexibility, but mm-hmm. basically I'm following the rules that are in place.
And those rules are in place in county facilities, as libraries, as we mentioned, county buildings. What about in county parks?
Yeah, well, county parks as well. Look, people are enjoying the outdoors as we've asked them to do, and we're very happy that we have a great system of public parks and open spaces, but we still can be too close to each other, unmasked, and creating a risk. So we're asking people, again, out of courtesy, we don't know who's a family member, we don't know who has been vaccinated or not, that if you are less than 10 feet away, which is what has been recommended by our chief medical officer, if you're less than 10 feet away of another person, we ask you to stay masked.
The governor also signed a new law that limits what local emergency orders can do outside of a hurricane emergency. These local orders have to be what the law describes as narrowly tailored to serve a compelling public health or safety purpose. How do you anticipate working within the confines of this new restriction on local emergency orders?
Yeah, these have always been subject to review by the county commission. That is part of the law. They have to be renewed, and we will, of course, adhere to those guidelines.
Let's take a phone call with the mayor of Miami-Dade County, Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava. Vladimir is in Miami. Go ahead, Vladimir. Thanks for listening and calling.
Thank you for having me. I completely agree with governor of that order. We are in a sunshine state, and we have to be in a sun to get more vitamin D, to give us more protection. So, and the mask or that restriction, it was very heavy for everyone. So, and basically this is right on time, because a lot of people now is vaccinated and they don't have to stay at home, because if they stay at home and they don't have that protection and no immunity. Also, if people are vaccinated or some people who already got COVID virus, if they don't expose more, if they don't have any, you know, strain for that immune system, that immune system will be deactivated with the time. So, and after 6 months or 7 months, the body will be again needed another vaccination.
Vladimir, let me unpack a couple of things here that you've talked about. You talked about vitamin D. The mask would not prevent one from absorbing vitamin D, even when you're outside in a sunny day here in South Florida, for what it's worth. You talked about being kind of confined to the home. Those were never mandates, but were requests. And then talking about, you know, immunity and the immunity system. But Madam Mayor, you're here there, and you know, in the local community, there are, you know, support for what the governor here has done, and there has been resistance to various restrictions that that you have put in place, your predecessor put in place, you continued. And so how do you find that balance? How do you respond to those folks in the community that that are looking and are supporting what the governor did this week?
So, Tom, we have been going in the right direction. Positivity is down, hospitalization is down, but we're not there yet. And to create more than 50% have been, that isn't any way approaching community immunity. So to Vladimir, I know it may be frustrating to have to, in some locations, continue to mask. It is up to private businesses. They get to decide. They can enforce their own masking rules. We cannot enforce on private businesses. But in the public space, I have many, many people grateful that I'm continuing to protect them in this way. And as we see things move in the right direction, hopefully we can continue to loosen up. We need people to vaccinate. That is the only way out of this pandemic, and we need everybody to double down and be part of the solution.
Madam Mayor, stick with us here. Wendy Rhodes is going to join our conversation. She's a political reporter for the Palm Beach Post. Wendy, what has been the general reaction amongst Palm Beach local governments to the governor's executive order this week?
It's been very similar to what's happening in Miami. I think our county up here has really struggled with a lot of people that don't wear masks. So I think while they are leaving it up to local businesses, whether or not to choose whether they want to require masks in businesses, in county offices and in schools, they still are requiring masks.
Yeah, schools is still a requirement. Are you seeing the kind of vocal encouragement in Palm Beach County that you're hearing here from the Miami-Dade County Mayor?
When you say encouragement.
Encouragement by either vaccines or reminding businesses and others that they have the ability to kind of set their own rules, that the executive order and the governor this week, while wiping out the local restrictions, did not impact local businesses in this case?
Well, yeah, I think that's a really good question. And the mayor touched on that. I think that there's a lot of confusion and a lot of difference in the interpretation of the law and where the line is drawn. And I think depending upon whom you're speaking and which side of the political fence they fall, which really shouldn't make any difference in a law, but it does. And it is interpreted differently by different people, not always for scientific reasons, often for political reasons. So I think we're seeing that.
I want to ask you each about another issue that was in the law signed by the governor this week. And this is the part of the law that bans so-called vaccine passports. This law prohibits businesses from requiring customers to prove that they've gotten a COVID-19 vaccination. This is an important issue here in South Florida as the cruise ship industry still awaits to set sail again from U.S. ports. Now, on Thursday, Norwegian Cruise Line CEO Frank Del Rio said on his company's quarterly conference call with analysts this.
Cruise ships have motors, propellers, and rudders, and God forbid we can't operate in the state of Florida for whatever reason, and there are other states that we do operate from, and we can operate from the Caribbean for ships that otherwise would have gone to Florida. We certainly hope it doesn't come to that.
Mayor Lewin-Cava, what do you make of that? What are you considering if cruise operators decide to reduce or leave Florida ports?
This would be a total tragedy, Tom, for our economy, for our workforce, for our community, the whole state of Florida. And I believe that this is a high-stakes game of chicken that is being played. Clearly, these cruise companies can go offshore to other places, and people will fly to take their cruises from there, and then we will be the losers. So we have federal guidance. We're ready to adhere to it. The cruise companies are ready to adhere to it. We've been vaccinating the crew members. We are ready to put these ships back to sail following CDC guidelines.
And Wendy with the Palm Beach Post, Wendy Rhodes, on this cruise ship issue, the governor may be a little bit out of step with his Republican colleagues in the United States Senate. Rick Scott has said he would support cruise ships and other businesses if they wanted to require proof of vaccines, right?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing Governor DeSantis is always saying is that government should stay out of private business. But what he's attempting to do, his critics would say, is regulate private business. Cruise lines have made it very clear that vaccine passports are an integral part of their ability to resail and keep their crews and passengers safe. So while Senator Scott told me he doesn't support vaccine passports for government employees,
right.
He said as far as private businesses, he would support them doing it for the simple fact that he believes that government should stay out of private business and that private businesses should be able to enact whatever policies they deem best to protect their workers and the people sailing with them.
Wendy, stick with us. Wendy Rhodes, political reporter for the Palm Beach Post. Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Lewin-Cava has been with us as well. Madam Mayor, thanks for your time today. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Tom.
Stick with us. Wendy's going to stick around because we still have some local and regional politics to talk about. The governor signed a new voting restriction law. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Thursday morning, Governor Ron DeSantis was a guest on the Fox and Friends morning program on Fox News Channel. Now, that's not so unusual for a Republican governor to appear on that cable channel, but this was not a normal interview. The governor was seated at a makeshift desk inside a hotel ballroom with a set of blue Sharpie markers, and next to him was Senate Bill 90 laying out new voting rules.
Right now, I have what we think is the strongest election integrity measures in the country. I'm actually going to sign it right here. It's going to take effect. So
there you go.
Bill is signed.
That's
and
official.
Here's what it does.
Boxes, a collection of vote-by-mail ballots by individuals, and requires voters to register and request vote-by-mail ballots every 2 years instead of the current four. Now, the signing of the legislation into law has come under scrutiny live on cable television, as it were, just as the law itself has come under scrutiny. No other news media was allowed into the hotel ballroom on Thursday to witness the signing, and some supporters in the crowd were wearing Trump DeSantis 2024 T-shirts. 800-743-WLRN is our telephone number, 800-743-9576. Wendy Rhodes, Palm Beach Post political reporter, still with us. Wendy, describe that scene Thursday morning.
Yeah, there was about 250 people, I would say, in there. It was interesting. There was definitely people carrying guns. There was a lot of rhinestones, a lot of DeSantis 2024 shirts, zero masks, like literally not one. Lots of flags, lots of people wearing anti-mask shirts and carrying anti-mask signs. But other than that, it was actually pretty mellow. You know, I'm used to Trump events being, you know, really high key, and this one was mellow in comparison.
What are the potential issues with how the governor staged this bill signing?
Yeah, well, you know, shutting out media, any media, liberal media, conservative media, mainstream media, shutting out any media from government goes against the very foundation of a free press and the fundamentals of democracy. I mean, like, these are things that authoritarian leaders do in communist and socialist countries. This is what you see happen in Russia and in China, although Trump did it too. But what it is it's a way to construct your own narrative and ensure that there's no one there to question your actions or your words. And there was definitely things that DeSantis said that were very questionable as far as how they were presented, as far as whether they were factual, in my opinion.
On the way out of the ballroom into his SUV, he was asked by the media gathered about why other news organizations weren't allowed in. And his response was that it was broadcast. It was on national television. Technically speaking, it was on cable television, not broadcast. So you have to be a cable customer in order to be able to have access to Fox News Channel or any news channel that may be on your cable tier. What do you know about the arrangements at that ballroom? This kind of balance between official state business, which he was doing, signing legislation into law, and folks who were there wearing clearly campaign material, Trump DeSantis 2024 T-shirts, for instance.
Right, sure. Well, typically, DeSantis sends out press releases when he comes into a town. He does them on often very, very short notice, a half hour or hour. Yeah. So it's very difficult to get to some of his events. But he typically does send those out. They didn't send one out in advance of this event. And I happen to know about the event going on because I'm local. So I reached out to his team the night before. They took my information. They said they'd follow up with me. And I never heard from them. Of course, I think that's what everybody else experienced too. Now, the Tampa Bay Times reported that they did speak with Fox News and that Fox told them that they never requested an exclusive interview. And in fact, they had no idea that DeSantis was going to use this interview to sign this bill live. So I think they were as shocked as we were.
I'm Tom Hudson. You're listening to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN, speaking with Wendy Rhodes, Palm Beach Post political reporter, about the governor's visit to West Palm Beach this week to sign into law new voting restrictions. So let's focus on the law here, Wendy. That's, you know, the long-lasting news here, well after the TV lights are turned off and the microphones are put away from that event in the ballroom in West Palm Beach. Describe the new law for us.
Well, I mean, some of the more contentious features of the law are like limits on drop boxes and hand-delivered ballots, restrictions on third-party voter registration efforts, requirements that voters sign up for vote by mail in more frequent intervals. You know, while supporters of the bill, they focus on, like, I think what's a kind of a common sense and universal thing is ID requirements, that you have to have ID to get a ballot. Well, you do have to have ID to get a ballot. Mm-hmm. So they're basically serving it up like all you have to do is present an ID and that's the only thing this does. But that's not the only thing it does. Because when you limit these drop boxes and you limit who can drop ballots off on behalf of somebody. What that does is disproportionately affect communities that are rural or where people have limited access to mass transportation to get somewhere to vote or get to a ballot drop box. So often in these communities, it falls to like local religious leaders and churches. They're often will go around and collect ballots from people and drop them off. They often give people rides. Well, now only immediate family members can drop ballots on your off on your behalf. And if you are, God forbid, disabled, right, you're really out of luck because you can't get to vote in person, you know, if you're somewhere, you know, rural, and you can't have somebody drop it off for you unless you have an immediate family member to do it. And they've also changed the rules on when you're waiting in line. So if you can't get to a drop box and you decide to go wait in person, right? So now you have these extraordinary long lines. Well, you're not even allowed to pass out water to somebody waiting in line. So if you're an elderly person or a disabled person, you're really going to be disadvantaged by these new laws. You know, we've seen people sit out here and wait in line 10, 12 hours to vote. Yeah. Imagine doing that in the heat with no access to water, to snacks, to anything.
What's been the reaction from county election supervisors, the on the ground folks who are going to have to kind of manage and exercise these new rules?
Well, that's actually a terrific question. The reaction is collective horror, I would say. You know, in Florida's 67 counties, the bipartisan group of supervisors of elections are very much against this. And they pled with the governor to not pass this law. This law affects, you know, it seems to have come across as a very partisan thing, but it affects everybody. It doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican. The changes in this law affect you. And what a lot of people don't realize is that the amount of vote by mails, yes, Democrats voted by mails in much higher numbers in the 2020 election in Florida. But in 2016, it was the opposite. Republicans voted more by mail. And I don't think a lot of people realize this. So this affects everybody.
Right. It doesn't matter the political party you're registered for. It's about the method of casting your ballot. If you're in person in a polling place on election day, early voting, or of course, vote by mail. When do these new rules go into place? Municipal elections are happening pretty frequently. And of course, there's an awfully big gubernatorial race folks are just beginning to gear up for in 2022.
You know, that's a really good question. I have read that that people won't have to re-register, like, for example, the new intervals that you have to register for vote by mail ballots. I've heard that that's not going to be in effect in 2022, that it's not going to go into effect afterwards. But I'm not 100% sure on that one.
Yeah. Details here still to be sorted out and to watch for from those election supervisors in your county. Wendy, thanks so much for sharing your reporting with us here today. Much appreciated.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, Wendy Rhodes, political reporter at the Palm Beach Post here on the South Florida Roundup. We got plenty more program to come on this Friday. Warnings of a bloody summer on some streets in South Florida. 800-743-WLRN is our phone number. 800-743-9576 to join our conversation next. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. This week, Miami-Dade County Commissioner Keone McGee issued a warning about violence in neighborhoods in the months ahead.
Our intel has shown us that there will be a bloody summer as it relates to the retaliations that's about to happen. Mr. Chair, you are aware within the last 2 days, there has been 4 homicides within the area. And from the intel we're getting from the ground, they're anticipating more.
McGee represents parts of South Dade County. In March, Miami-Dade police warned about a significant increase in gun violence in the northern part of the county, after almost 36 shootings in the first 2 months of the year. In April, 3-year-old Elijah LaFrance became the 3rd young child in 9 months killed by gunfire in North Miami-Dade County. He was shot and killed at his birthday party. Electronic monitoring picked up the sounds of gunshots in the neighborhood, and police think someone else was the target. So what's behind the increase in gun violence? What about this warning of a bloody summer? How are police and community organizers and neighbors responding? 800-743-9576. To join our conversation here on this Friday afternoon on the South Florida Roundup, 800-743-9576. Freddie Ramirez is with us, the Miami-Dade County Police Director. Director, welcome back to WLRN. Thanks for your time.
Good afternoon. How are you, my friend?
I am doing well. It's nice to hear from you. What's your reaction to that warning this week from Commissioner McGee about a bloody summer?
Well, yeah, Commissioner McGee, he's very much in tune with his community, just like the other commissioners. And we're all very concerned with the current gun violence situation. Now, to put in perspective, right now we have 41 murders in unincorporated Miami-Dade County. And you compare that to other cities of our size, those cities are route to 1,000 murders, you know, for the year. However, that being said, you're seeing these tragic incidents where children are struck due to, you know, violence over, if it's just some sort of road rage, or now the new situation that we have going on is this COVID fraud, narco trade situations like that are going on. A lot of our youth being used to be as those trigger persons to act these acts of violence. And it really is an all hands on deck approach with this. I mean, this is also a byproduct of COVID as well. If you look around the country, many cities are experiencing the same situation. So I see it as a societal, a socioeconomic situation right now.
Yeah. I want to ask you about a number of items there you mentioned, but the intel that Commissioner McGee referred to, do you know what he's referring to? Any police intelligence that you have that you can share with us?
It's not only police intelligence, but it's community intelligence. So we have a great connection with our community partners, like the Circle of Brotherhood, mothers of victims of gun violence and other unofficial leaders in the community. And they'll tell us when these shootings happen. That's why a lot of times the information doesn't come forward. Our detectives are working the lead, doing lateral investigation. We've taken just on the 3-year-old death, we've impounded at least 25 guns off of lateral investigation to try to get justice on this. But the problem is there's a cone of silence in that realm, because although there was a lot of people present, nobody wants to talk. And even though we're getting a lot of tips from the community, but it's still not enough to build a solid case to identify a shooter so we could bring them to justice. And that's why it takes all of us to end this violence.
Director, stick with us. You mentioned the Circle of Brotherhood Miami. Lyle Muhammad is with us. He's the executive director of that organization. Lyle, welcome back to WLRN. Nice to have you.
My honor and pleasure, and greetings to you and to Director Ramirez.
I want to ask you, Lyle, about the comments from Commissioner McGee. I don't know if you knew about them before today here on the radio program, but he's warning of a bloody summer. What do you make of that? What can you share with us?
Well, to get right to the core of the matter, I don't remember a summer that wasn't bloody. And so we need to put this into a proper context. And the proper context is, if we keep on doing the same things over and over again and expecting different results, then we must be insane. And so whether the comments were made yesterday or last year or 10 years, until we allow those individuals who have a comprehensive understanding of what needs to be done to be properly resourced to do it, these stories will continue next summer and the summer and the summer to follow.
Yeah. Understood. It seems like Commissioner McGee may be referring to something specific, though.
Well, for me, every death is specific. For me, and I'll give you one example. Mm-hmm. I remember just maybe about 10 years ago, in the city of Miami, I'll use this example because it fits. There was a roundup of a so-called vicious drug organization and operation where 50 people were arrested. All their pages were put on the front page of the Miami Times, and this big raid and all this guns and all this violence and drugs put to rest. And 3 days later, the same drug holes were in operation again. Hmm. So for me, that is proper context.
Director Ramirez, is there something specific behind the commissioner's warning? And I should note, we invited the commissioner for this conversation. Unfortunately, his schedule couldn't accommodate the live broadcast time that we wanted to do this with. So our apologies to the commissioner, and we'll certainly invite him back over the next many months. But Director, is there something specific that you know about that the commissioner's referring to when he talks about the potential of a bloody summer for retaliations?
What's specific about is whenever you have targeted shootings and the motives of the shootings are as a result of some sort of retribution, beef, social media bullying, or not being broken off the proper amount of money off of a fraud situation, and you do a random shooting at 2 a.m, you shoot a 17-year-old, even though law enforcement community leaders are involved, there's still going to be a sense amongst a tight-knit community that they're going to handle the situation themselves. And it's really, I think that he's speaking on in a tone of what he's hearing, the anger from the community, the word on the street. And then we have our information as well. That's why it's so important that we maintain our community policing model, our strategic enforcement strategies that we do, and focusing on targeting those that are the ones that are facilitating this violence and acting on this violence. It's not the community as a whole. It's a small percentage of individuals that are causing these problems.
Certainly. But the problems, unfortunately, have coming with deadly consequences or very harmful consequences for those that are in that line of fire. Lyle, how is the Circle of Brotherhood Miami responding? You spoke about can't be doing the same things over and over again. How is the Circle responding and anticipating the summer months?
Well, we anticipate the summer months as we anticipate every day,
and
doing all that we can in terms of not just dealing with violence prevention, but with the proper building of our community. Back in 2018, we had an opportunity to present a community wellness plan. So popular was during the Sunshine meeting that you had officials from both Miami-Dade and the city of Miami present. And I keep looking back at that comprehensive plan, and I look at so little of it that's been paid attention to. And I mention that because we're not going to pretend like we have to invent something new if we haven't invested in what we already know is a solution to our problem. So we have a serious issue again where crime and violence is a reflection of crime and violence in America as a whole. But the people who know how to deal with the cultural shifts that need to take place are underfunded and underrepresented.
Tell us a little bit more about what you mean by that, Lyle, some specifics and some of the priorities of that plan from years ago that you think could be implemented before the summer.
Well, again, I can't talk about that, a comprehensive plan, in 5 minutes.
Understood.
But one thing we have said is we have challenged elected officials. We have challenged crime experts. We have challenged anybody who wants to solve this to vet our plan. And if there's something wrong with it that could be corrected or redirected, you know, I remember when the mayor recently had a press conference, and one of the comments that we made at the press conference that gun violence cannot become a political football. And unfortunately, people are leaning in their own personal interest instead of really critically looking at analyzing what can be done. And then you have organizations like us, we're doing all we can. But when you have aspects that can be properly implemented, I just give you one example.
Yeah.
We have a great mentoring connection with the Department of Juvenile Justice. And many of those young men who grow up to be those shooters and those killers on the street, we have an opportunity to intervene. But that has to be resourced. You can't ask somebody to volunteer for a full-time job.
Yeah, but by resource, you mean funding. You mean dollars.
Funding
among
is a
other
part
resources,
of it. But,
but
resources is not just funding, although that's a major part of it. Resources is also intelligence and linking the proper connections that need to be made so that there is a seamless understanding. One of the new directives that the mayor wants to roll out is what is called a holistic approach to public safety. We have to define that and then build the tenets to support it.
Lyle, stick with us. Lyle Muhammad is the executive director of the Circle of Brotherhood Miami. Freddie Ramirez is the director of the Miami-Dade County Police Department. Both of them are with us here live on this Friday talking about gun violence in South Florida. 800-743-9576 to join our conversation. 800-743-WLRN. In 2020, there were 272 homicides in Miami-Dade County. That was up 45% from 2016. And last year, almost one in four victims were 21 years old or younger. Director Ramirez, What's behind this increase in gun violence?
Well, COVID really caused a lot of issues for us. Here's the true victim right now of COVID right now is our youth. And I think Brother Lyle touched on that. You know, there's a lot of kids that aren't going to school. They have, you know, challenged homes right now. There's no money and they're living off of the social media platform, bullying, getting pulled into retaliatory situations. So if we don't invest in these communities, if we don't not only provide resources, but get to these children, that's the initiatives like the mayor's Peace and Prosperity Initiative that we're not only policing, but we're overlaying it with resources. If you see our social media, when we do Help Us Find a Murderer, we do a video, we give you a whole look at the situation. Not only do you hear about the victim, the mother left behind, but you see the surroundings that these shootings have happened. And what you see are communities that need to be enriched, because if we don't enrich them right now, my officers are going to be stuck in the same merry-go-round that Brother Lyle talks about. It'll be the same thing over and over. We need to invest in our communities, invest in our youth, and give them a way forward, because if not, these gun violence is going to continue. Our shooters are going to get younger, and our victims, tragically, are going to get younger. This is a health situation right now.
Director Ramirez, give us a sense of what the preparations are for Miami-Dade Police, for the department that you head up, as it heads into the summer. This bloody summer is warned by Commissioner McGee, and as Lyle Muhammad described, every summer in South Florida in some neighborhoods. What specific preparations are, or what's different in the preparations that Miami-Dade County Police are making now?
Well, we've already done departmental changes, as well as in our enforcement capabilities, our patrol capabilities, and most importantly, our community outreach components. We've created a community affairs bureau. These are officers that are dedicated to get into our communities and identify resource, mentor our children, get a group at ground level to stop this chatter, to hopefully that a child won't decide to pick up a firearm to resolve their grievances, but maybe talk to an officer. And we partner with the Circle Brother and other organizations as well. We've combined our Economic Crimes Bureau and our Narcotics Bureau, because the world of narcotics has changed. What we're seeing now is fraud, a little bit of dope. So we've housed them together so we could be more specific and more strategic as well. We enhance our patrols, big community policing platform. We have a real-time crime center. Every piece of resource that we can put, a lot of them are deployed into our challenged communities. And it's not there to be a police state. It's to keep them safe, because if you ask the residents of those communities, they're going to tell you they want to see more police. They want us there, because when that shot spotter goes off at night and you hear 60 rounds like this at night, that's bone chilling. And a lot of times my officers get there with that shot spotter before it's called. That call is received and the smoke is in the air. There's casings everywhere and the body's on the street and the mom is screaming. And that's the visual that goes on. It's not just the summer. It goes around round and round every year. And the more that we suffer these economic issues of what's going on in our country with our youth, the bigger that void is going to get.
Lyle, what can you share with us with some of those tactics that the director laid out there?
Well, I first want to say that having watched Director Ramirez grow into the capacity of leadership that he's in, it's very rare that you have a sincere police force that's about commitment to change and transformation. And I know that to be personal. It's very rare that you have an organization like the Circle of Brotherhood that has a holistic understanding of what needs to be done in our communities to dramatically halt or increase crime. But as long as people who control purse strings and resources are more concerned about program outcomes, are more concerned about people to look good, instead of employing people who know what needs to be done, this will be a revolving door. But there's an opportunity right now. And let's just see what happens in Miami-Dade. The Circle of Brotherhood is participating in one of the county's anti-violence initiative programs. But there's so much more that we could be doing. There's so much more we could be doing if we had the resources. And I know we're not the only organization that can say that.
What's been the impact in the neighborhoods, Lyle, that you have members working, the impact of increased police presence, for instance?
Well, the reality is that the neighborhoods that we're present in, they don't need an increase of police presence. They need a decrease of police presence. And the neighborhoods that we've been working successfully in, when there is a police presence, they're not just seeing police officers when it's a crime or something that's gone wrong. They see us doing things together, working together, recreational activities with the young people together. It's proper community and policing relations where we're found anyway.
Director Ramirez, in February, the Northside District said that it would have an increased police presence in what was called hotspots. What does that look like? And does that continue in the Northside District, and does it continue in other districts?
That continues in our Northside District, our Intercoastal District, and our South District. And that presence is not just a patrol car sitting there. It's engagement. It's getting information, being present so that the community feel safe. But we had a Brother Lau touched on a great point. Our parks program now, through our Community Affairs Bureau, we're increasing our participation in the parks. And it's not to be there to be, an armed officer standing in the park. No, it's a great way for our officers through in between patrols, go by the football programs like Coach Demps, Don Gules, and just make contact with these youth. Because you know what? Those youth, they want to be touched. They want to be mentored. They want, a lot of them, and you ask Brother Lau, they want to be cops when they grow up. The problem is that in the environments that they're in right now, there's something that just, you know, it's like control alt delete, and it takes them off course because you don't have the family structure, not their fault, economic issues that they're diverted. And the devil's playhouse is that cell phone, that social media platform. You don't know how many countless murders have happened over silly things. Silly, a picture with an airsoft calling out somebody else, 1,000 hits on it. Next thing you know, they make a comment back and you're standing in the corner and you're shot over foolishness.
Lyle, what about the role of social media? The director has referenced that a few times in our conversation.
Well, social media is a reflection of mainstream media. I reflect back to the perpetration of violence as a viable means for countries to solve violence. I remember in Michael Moore's documentary, Bowling for Columbine, he was interviewing the president of Boeing, who happened to be standing right in front of a nuclear warhead. And he asked him, where do you think these young people get these ideas about violence from? And he says, I have no idea. So what you see playing out from the Tell Eye Vision, from social media, is the same thing you see playing out in major mainstream media. We have to accept the fact that we're an extremely, extremely violent country. Even when we had a chance to work with some of our comrades from Parkland who came down to join our Hunger Nine when they went on a hunger strike 2 years ago, The idea in reality became that both urban and suburban violence have its roots in the core of a very, very violent society that we've raised our young people up in. And we're not going to solve the problem by putting Band-Aids on.
Lyle Muhammad is the executive director of the Circle of Brotherhood Miami. Freddie Ramirez is the director of the Miami-Dade County Police Department. They're both with us here on the South Florida Roundup. My name is Tom Hudson. We are talking about gun violence in Dade County in South Florida. Director Ramirez, you've mentioned COVID fraud a few times when I asked you about some of the causes behind this increase in gun violence. What is COVID fraud? What do you mean by that?
Yeah. Our government, of course, is providing resources to our communities to help get out of this financial crisis. And whenever those programs come in, there's always those individuals that know how to reverse engineer it and create fake claims and start garnering that money through if it's a fake credit card, a fake COVID request, money request. And what they do is when they gather all this money together, a lot of them are little hybrid gangs or little organizations. Then when the funds come in, they don't get their portion or they feel they've been wronged. Then what happens, it goes into a verbal dispute, then to I'm going to come and get you. And the come and get you is really fast. That's why you'll see in the week, there'll be no murders. It's quiet. And then all of a sudden, it could be noon. It could be 1 a.m. out of nowhere. 4 or 5 guys will pop out with assault rifles and just shoot indiscriminately into the direction of the one person they want to hit. And they don't care about anybody else, the moms, the grandmas, the kids, whoever's standing there. They don't care. And they do it within 30 seconds and they're gone. So that's what we're dealing with. It's not like every day like you see in other cities. It's just this buildup and this momentum that you hear in the streets. There's going to be blood in the street. I'm going to get you for this. You start hearing it. Even, I'll disclose it right now. Even with the 3-year-old right now that we're working hard, we're hearing in the street that they're waiting for the baby to be laid to rest so it could be handled that way. Think about that what's being said out there. I'm hearing it from several different people in our community. I know Brother Lot of his, our community relations board hears that, and we get that information. So that puts us, you know, at a very alert status, and we're trying to stop that. We're trying to stop that so we don't have more bloodshed. That's Director, what you get. That's a perfect example.
Pardon my naivete here. What do you mean handle it? When your street intel, so to speak, is hearing that they're waiting for this 3-year-old Elijah LaFrance to have a funeral, be buried, to handle it. What does that mean?
To put retribution to those who they think were involved in this, instead of letting us, law enforcement, put them to justice. Unfortunately, the anger, the rage, the situations that you have in hand there, they're gonna put come back for revenge, and we can't have that, because what that's gonna lead to is another wave of retaliation, another wave of random shooting, another child that gets hit that has nothing to do with it. God forbid, one of my officers. You understand that? And that's the problem. And it's a buildup. It's a buildup in the back end, a buildup, and then the event happens.
Lyle, what is the release valve among many release valves in this particular case? You heard the director there, obviously very concerned about retribution in this specific tragic case with the 3-year-old who was shot and killed by an errant bullet in April.
Unfortunately, this is the story over and over again. The first release valve is going back to the original traumas and oppressions that are in communities where people have learned to solve their problems with the lowest form of communication, and that's violence. And unfortunately, we've had a great, great teacher. So you can ask the same questions about why are we seeing an increase in mass shootings across the country, whether they be school shootings or not. We see violence increasing because no one's going to the root causes. Everyone wants to slap a Band-Aid on it. We have an opportunity right here in Miami-Dade right now to pull back and take a look at the great minds and resources that we have if we're truly concerned about saving human life.
There was a new piece of county legislation that was approved this week called the Safety Neighborhood Emergency Team Pilot Program. It'll be in operation in South Dade and in the Liberty City northeast portion of the county. Lyle, are you familiar with this effort?
I am not, but any effort that we applaud, I will say this, it is one thing to have efforts. We can have 10,000 of them, but if we don't have the right people behind those efforts doing the work, it'll be a secular thing. So I hope it's a good thing.
Director Ramirez, are you familiar with this pilot program?
Yes, we are. We're involved with that through the mayor's office with Commissioner McGee. And really, it's this proposal or this plan is exactly has the elements of what we're talking about here. It's
what
not
will
just
it mean?
I'm sorry?
What will it mean? What's the manifestation of this?
Resources, social workers, camps for the children, getting money and funds for these neighborhoods that really need this right now. Because if these children live in this environment, it's just gonna perpetuate more, a sense of loss and a sense of violence. What we want to do is partner with law enforcement, with our social workers, with our community leaders to go in there, boots on the ground, and just triage in there and start identifying these problems and start getting in there and fixing this. A wellness component for that as well through our parks, through our PAL program. And that's really what it is. We need to invest. Look, the bottom line is this. You got to invest in these communities. If you do not, like Brother Lyle said, we'll be here again and again, and it won't change.
Yeah, Lyle, let me give you the final word here in our last minute. How are you feeling? Listeners may be listening to this feeling perhaps helpless. They may not see this violence in their own communities, for instance. What's your guidance? What are your words of advice?
First, to government and to business leaders, you're going to have to step up to the plate and fund some real, real holistic initiatives. Number two, to the community, we have to understand that we are dealing with a multifaceted array of problems, and we can never give up hope on ourselves. But people are going to have to stop speaking up, not about just the violence that takes place on a daily basis, but the violence that takes place in all of our institutions that leads to people leaning toward the lowest form of communication. But reach out to the Circle of Brotherhood. We'll do all that we can. Circle of Brotherhood, Miami.org.
Lyle, we have to leave it there. Circle of Brotherhood, Miami Executive Director Lyle Muhammad with us. Lyle, thanks for your time today. Much appreciated.
Honors ours. We thank you.
Freddie Ramirez is the director of the Miami-Dade County Police Department. Director Ramirez, thank you for spending time with us as well.
Thank you very much. Have a good weekend.
You as well. Be safe. It is the South Florida Roundup this week, produced by Andrea Perdomo and Leslie Ovalle. Engagement editor Katie Lepre, Lance Dixon, our digital editor, news director Terrence Shepard, Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. The director of radio programming at WLRN is Jason Zabka. Director of radio operations is Peter J. Mertz. The show's technical supervisor this week, Richard Ives. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling, listening, and supporting public media. This program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist.